Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I am your host, Andrei Palamariu, and I am the APEC Director for Elkett Global Executive Search. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward some of the most interesting stories about success and failure from leaders in the industry.
Hello, David. Hey, it's great to have you on the podcast. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now, and I'm very happy to have you. So maybe we start with setting the scene, right? And you've had a long career, a lot of interesting highlights. I would just maybe ask you first to guide us through the big highlights of the career and maybe also how you ended up in the current position with Overhaul.
Okay. So it's a long and twisted story, Andre. So thank you so much for inviting me. I really do appreciate it. And it's always great to talk about supply chain. So I'm a manufacturing engineer and a chartered engineer by qualification. I started off in high volume manufacturing with Coca-Cola in Belfast in Northern Ireland, where I'm from. Then took a job with a small engineering company, again based out of Belfast, a company called Rotary International. And they won the contract for the Hong Kong airport back in the mid-90s. And this is a picture of it behind me here. This is a real picture. And so I went out and lived in Hong Kong for a couple of years as a project engineer, which was really my, you know, supply chain didn't exist in the mid-90s. It was still manufacturing and something called logistics. But my job on the airport was actually coordination of inbound shipping containers, getting equipment to site. And that kind of got me really interested. I came back to Dublin in Ireland and spent a couple of years with Anderson Consulting as a process consultant. And, you know, at that time, Ireland was the manufacturing hub of Europe. And, you know, a lot of foreign direct investment, you know, you had Dell, you had Apple, Microsoft were there. And it was really, you know, coming into its own as that hub for Europe. And so I spent a lot of time consulting with indigenous manufacturing companies, some of the big guys as well. And then in 1999, joined Microsoft. I was doing a 2 year of everything because I wasn't sure what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I was trying everything for 2 years. So I joined Microsoft for 2 years, thinking that I'll go and see what's happening and then do something else. And that lasted for 23 years. So I kind of fell apart somewhere in the middle. But joining Microsoft back in 1999, Bill Gates was still the CEO. And it was a fascinating company. The main product was big box software. So it was big boxes of Windows and big boxes of Office, lots of disks, lots of manuals. But I was put onto a project very early on called Xbox. And this was Microsoft's foray into a real hardware business, but also into the gaming world. And so I was responsible for the setup of Xbox infrastructure for Europe, Middle East, and Africa, which meant we were building Xboxes. We had to set up distribution centers. It was the first time we were shipping direct to retail for a consumer product. Obviously, it was an expensive hardware product. It had a lot of accessories. We had to work with the gaming community. It was just an incredible turn for Microsoft to do something like this. But the supply chain had to be built to accommodate it because the big box software business was really easy. Ship it to a distributor and everything else worked after that. But then suddenly dealing with retail was a very different, a complex supply chain that had to be created. So I had a lot of fun building and creating that supply chain, designing it, building it, putting it in place, and then bringing Xbox to market. And, you know, I was on the production line for the very first console. I just had a lot of, you know, amazing experiences as Microsoft grew that business. As the Xbox business continued to roll and into, you know, Xbox 360 and then Xbox One and on, I just was managing it the whole way through. Microsoft liked to give you more, when they think you're in any way comfortable, they like to give you something additional to do. So I ended up managing teams in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and also Asia Pacific and Japan, and then eventually moved to the US in early 2012 and took a global role managing supply chain for the world. And at that time, we were busy with Xbox. We had a lot of different products in the market, and then we bought a phone company. So if you remember back, we bought Nokia. So I spent a lot of time on that Nokia acquisition and then integration into the Microsoft supply chain. And so, you know, we were building, you know, 40 to 50 million phones a quarter, which at that time was equivalent to what Apple were building. So it was a very significant supply chain and all of the trouble that comes with that and the integration of two big companies. we did a great job. Then we decided to move along and we sold off the Nokia business. But at the same time, we were starting the Surface business. So we started to build our own, you know, high-level PCs and building those from scratch. So I ended up spending months on end in back in southern China, you know, helping figure out how to spray paint magnesium, all of the cool stuff that you have to do in building a state-of-the-art laptop or, you know, Surface computer. Managed that on through. And then the last couple of years in Microsoft were interesting. I started to get frustrated by being continually tied to an ERP. The supply chain was changing. The needs of the supply chain were changing. Microsoft had opened its own retail stores, the Microsoft stores. We were growing an online business. And our supply chain didn't fit the technology that we were trying to run it on. So we tried doing some things ourselves and figured out that it's really difficult at times to build your own supply chain software. So we took a different approach and we went out to market and we started looking for companies that were excelling in different parts of the supply chain. And then we started to work with them. And we said, okay, first problem, supply chain visibility. We need to have end-to-end visibility of our logistics network. So we partnered with C.H. Robinson and their division TMC and built a product called Navisphere Vision, which is still one of the leading visibility products in the market today. That product was the intellectual property of TMC, but it was a lot of the intellectual horsepower of my Microsoft logistics team at the time. And we said about, we just didn't have any constraints. We said, this is what we want, and this is how we think it should be built. And then we worked with the engineers in TMC to actually create that product. And after, you know, 12, 18 months, we'd built this amazing solution. And we stood in front of an 84-inch Surface hub with this world on a page, little ship icons, airplane icons. It was amazing. You could touch a ship on this massive screen and it would bring up the orders that were on that ship. It was just fantastic. And we stood back and looked at our work and said, what problem have we just solved? And kind of had a laugh and said, okay, visibility is not enough. You have to be able to pull intelligence from this information. And so it started a trend of we looked across our supply chain and we looked for the different problems and said, rather than try to solve this ourselves, let's go and find somebody out there who's done a great job in actually solving it and then see if we can deploy that technology. And that led us through a journey on forecasting and planning, inventory management, security, all of the different attributes. But we were actually finding these small companies, and you know, I mean small in terms of Microsoft, they might have been a $100 million company, but they were small compared to the $2 trillion of Microsoft. And we were deploying those to run our $10 billion supply chain. And it started to become not something that we might do. It was everything that we were going to do. We said, hey, this is actually really interesting because we're no longer dependent on changes in our ERP system to facilitate enabling the complexity that our supply chain demands. We can now layer technologies on top of our existing architecture and pivot at a minute's notice to whatever way our supply chain needs to pivot. And so those were my last couple of years. Microsoft gave me a title. They called me Supply Chain Technology Officer because this was what I was, not only deploying the technologies, but I was looking ahead in the industry, trying to figure out what the next gap was. And the next gap was, I got to start working with venture capital, with private equity who were investing in these companies. And so early in 2022, I decided, 23 years is a long enough stay in Microsoft. I'm so passionate about driving the industry forward. I need to go and be in the middle of this. So I retired from Microsoft and jumped into this new world of evolving technologies and figuring out how these could be deployed in a supply chain environment to really drive change. And that's kind of where I find myself today.
That's a lot to unpack, David. And it sounds like Microsoft was, when they had a big project that had they never done before, was it the Xbox, the Surface, or they had to call somebody in and you were the guy to do it after the Xbox success, which I can only imagine how difficult it was to figure out everything from the beginning. Of course, the other project sounds like a big challenge as well. But again, I'm sure we can spend a whole day only with interesting stories of the factory floor.
There's so many interesting stories and tales around even the early days of Xbox. It's a series of podcasts all on its own, so we're not going to go there.
Yeah, we can write a few books on it, I'm sure. Now, David, let's talk a bit about what's happening now, and you alluded to it with Overhaul, right? I'm curious a bit, what attracted you to them? What's the current role, and what's your focus in the coming couple of years or months, or how do you see everything?
So Overhaul was one of the solutions that I actually deployed in the Microsoft supply chain. And I got to know the CEO and the founders, you know, quite well. And that's part of the joy of working with early stage companies is you get under the hood very quickly. You get to meet the people, you get to meet the people who are designing and writing the technology and get to understand the vision and how they're thinking about it. Overhaul had just approached the industry in a different way. They had thought about the connectivity as IoT was the primary way to actually get those real-time alerts. Lots of people can scrape milestones from carriers and everything else, but supply chain has to be real-time. It has to be, you've got to be able to understand what's happening now to decide what you're going to do next. And I just love the concept of the fact that all the trucks that are on the road already have existing telemetry. And what Overhaul had done was said, well, we can grab that existing telemetry, we can add third-party devices in there, and we can create a picture of everything that's on the road. And when something bad happens, an unscheduled stop, a deviation from routes, a backdoor opening, we can actually detect that and then create a response system around it. So Overhaul is not just about, you know, a dot on a map. It actually is track and trace, but to a different level. So when a truck does deviate, it's an alert system and then a managed service which kicks in so that, you know, me as Microsoft as a shipper, I could sleep safely at night knowing that the latest Xboxes were under the watchful eye of Overhaul, and they were going to get to their destination safe and secure. And, you know, there's a law enforcement connect service so that when something and bad things happen, like I don't think anybody understands just the level of cargo theft, even in the US. And the connectivity that Overhaul has with local law enforcement, we understand where a truck is. We understand everything about that truck, the driver's name, the driver's phone number, the carrier, the subcontractor, the license plate, the load ID. We've got all of that information. So when something bad happens, it's not calling 911 and trying to explain what we're doing. It's a direct connection into local law enforcement and now even into Interpol to actually target these organized crime groups who are really active in the Bay Area, in California, around Memphis, around Louisville, all of the big hubs in the US. There's organized crime because it's big money. And so you saw all those pictures, you know, during COVID of rail cars being opened, you know, coming out of Chicago and products all over the track. There's a lot of theft that happens, and Overhaul is really about keeping that safe. So when I retired from Microsoft, Barry Conlon, the CEO of Overhaul, I always talk to him regularly anyway. And so we had a conversation. He said, look, I've got to, you know, we're growing and we've got a lot more to do. And I think you'd really enjoy coming on board and just helping us in that lift, helping us in that getting to the next stage and continuing to grow the company and expand our scope and how we think about technology and, you know, obviously a partnership with Microsoft. And it was just too exciting to say no. And at the same time, you know, I was working as an advisor for several different companies. I chair the advisory board today for Interos, supply chain risk management company based out of Virginia, for Algo, which is machine learning, artificial intelligence, focused on forecasting and planning based out of Detroit. And then in numerous other startups, including the Visibility Council based out of California, which is, you know, an industry body bringing together academia, investors, Fortune 500, and solution providers into an environment whereby we can have a serious discussion. It's not a show and tell. It's not a, I'm going to explain to you how great I am at supply chain. It's a, has anybody actually figured out inventory management? Can we have a discussion about what's good and what's bad? And then talk to some of the early stage companies coming in who are trying to solve the problem and getting them connected directly with the corporates who are trying to figure out themselves where to start. And it's a, you know, the Visibility Council is a very, it's a rich conversation, and it's not a presentation. We don't use PowerPoints. And so the Visibility Council, I'm chair of innovation for the Visibility Council, and we've just actually, you know, started a great program with CSCMP, and we've devised an academy, which is really trying to fill that gap for up-and-coming supply chain professionals. Because we recognized in those conversations that there's an element of maturity that has to happen. There's an awareness of technology that's sadly lacking in the C-suites, but also in the up-and-coming generation of supply chain executives. There's a breakdown in conversation. How do you explain to a CFO or a CIO how a supply chain technology is going to benefit the company and why it's a worthwhile investment? And then this overarching just confidence in supply chain is no longer in the corner. We're no longer just a cost center. We're now at the top table. COVID was an accelerant in terms of bringing us to that top table. Now we have an inherent responsibility as supply chain practitioners to actually not only keep our seat, but help companies globally actually think about this better. And, you know, when you start to unpack just how important supply chain is, supply chain wins wars. Supply chain loses wars. Supply chain feeds the hungry. Supply chain vaccinates the population. This is, and I'm not trying to be over dramatic, but it's kind of like, this isn't about getting boxes to Amazon. This is about how the world trades. This is about how the world exists. And so being part of that and bringing that community together and then teaching the next generation, they've got to think about generative AI. They've got to think about machine learning. They've got to not just rely on the good old tried and tested, well, forecasting's inaccurate, so we'll accept it. There's a different way to think about this. And now is the point of inflection. It's time to think differently.
That's fascinating, David. And on the point of the academy, maybe we can talk more about this personally together to see how we can collaborate. But we are trying to do a similar thing with executives, trying to help them open up and understand how they should communicate outside of the supply chain box and jargon, like you mentioned, with the CFO, with the CEO, just to make sure they talk the business language and make it clear how important it is to invest on the long term in innovation in supply chain. And now and then, you know, like you said earlier, you need to know what's happening now in order to know what you should do next. And right. It's not just the dots on the map or whatever. It's okay, we need the intelligence to be wise about our decisions or our next decisions. You are in a very interesting position where you're exposed both with Overhaul to a lot of interesting clients that have challenges with theft and fraud and other things, but also with the new startups that you interact with on the Visibility Council and other such positions you have. I was curious, and maybe this is a bit of a general question, but I'm curious what gives you hope and excitement when you look across the tech space in supply chain? And maybe we can cover some trends here, but the key here is hope and excitement. Maybe you can elaborate more on that.
So what gives me hope and excitement is the fact that people are willing to have the conversation. It's not a closed door. There's almost like there's a hidden hunger among supply chain practitioners, and they're desperate to do better. They understand that. And you know, I preach this when I talk in the industry, and I say, look, supply chain has been waiting for technology to catch up. The physical infrastructure was always ahead of technology. Over the last 10 years, even more so in the last 5 years, technology has not only caught up, it's now surpassed the physical supply chain. And so what gives me hope is that people are starting to understand that. You know, I get asked a lot about generative AI and how to think about that from a supply chain perspective. And I keep telling people, it is unbelievably exciting. This is not ChatGPT, you know, writing you a menu for the dinner party that you're not going to have. This is actually the ability to grab disparate sources of data, and without a huge integration or months of architecting, being able to pull intelligence from that information, which is something we've been crying out forever, right? One of the biggest problems in supply chain is the fact that everything got decentralized really quickly, and everything was a bolt-on to a bolt-on. And it was never, we never had the time or the money to go back and re-architect it. And so everything becomes, you know, the behemoth. Everything becomes a massive project. You're going to re-engineer your supply chain. Oh, 2 years, $100 million. And nobody, everybody is disenfranchised before you even begin. And in my career, I have sat through so many of those discussions where it starts off with hope and ends up in disappointment. And it's nobody's fault. It's just the way that it was designed. But how about if we think about this, right? That old saying, all ships rise with the tide. But what if I don't need all ships to rise? What if I only need one ship to rise? If we stop thinking about trying to solve all of supply chain's problems as one project and start thinking about picking off the pieces using the latest and greatest software as a service applications, we can move really quickly and really cleverly and very cost effectively. What gives me hope and what inspires me is when I have these conversations with some of the biggest companies in the world, and I see them getting excited, and I see them questioning me, saying, that sounds very fanciful. Is it real? Can you really do that? And I go, I ran a very big supply chain, and I did it, and it worked. And it worked so well, we kept on doing it. And now I go and work with the companies who enabled me my success. That's how passionate I am about it. And getting that message across is really, it's starting to get attention. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of nervousness, right? Supply chain practitioners are suspicious by nature. It's almost as if we fear change and we're really concerned. You know, in supply chain, you're kind of known for your last failure, right? I tell the story, you know, I've got several plaques on my wall for being part of the biggest media releases in history. So when we launched Halo 2 on Xbox, at the time, it was actually bigger than the Titanic from a media volume release, right? We shipped something ridiculous, like, you know, 50 million units into 122 countries for one day, for a one day release. And we were doing all of this. It couldn't be released beforehand. We had to be really careful. It was all tied into marketing. It was an incredible supply chain challenge. And we did it. Now, at the time, a very senior executive of Microsoft just happened to be in Australia and just happened to be in Alice Springs, which in Australia is like way out in the middle of nowhere in Australia, and went into a JB Hi-Fi store, which was a very small store, and Halo was not on the shelf. I got a phone call asking me why the launch was such a failure. And I'm kind of scratching my head going, I've probably delivered 49,999,998 copies exactly as I was supposed to. And the one store in the globe that didn't have them on shelf at that time is what I'm judged on. And that, you know, that's not really, but that's the supply chain challenge, which is you're kind of judged on your last failure, not your last success. And so getting supply chain practitioners to think about change, to think about, if I do this and it doesn't work, what's going to happen then? And so this concept of failing fast, to be able to succeed, you have to have the growth mindset. And the growth mindset is, I'm going to fail fast. I'm going to try something. And if it works, I'm going to double down. If it doesn't work, I know that way didn't work. And I'm going to try something else. The beauty about working with early stage companies and startup technologies, you can have an idea on a Friday afternoon and have a proof of concept on a Tuesday morning. That is the process. That's how quickly you can iterate on ideas. So imagine, rather than sitting down to a weekly 2-year project review in terms of what things might be, imagine being able to iterate at that speed on a daily basis to get to where you want to be. It's amazing. And that's what the fact that people are starting to grasp onto this, the fact that people are excited and embracing technology, is gives me hope that we are in the point of a major change, and it's going to happen. If people think that generative AI is another blockchain or another RFID, they're kind of sadly mistaken, because this is going to permeate the whole way through the supply chain. And to a level that we can't even understand. You know, I don't know if you've heard of Roy Amara and Amara's law. So Amara's law kind of it states along the lines of, we tend to overestimate the impact of technology in the short term and underestimate the impact of technology in the long term. And where we are right now is that point of inflection. It's gone from a AI can do everything to a little bit of, you know, lack of credibility. Well, it's not that good. It's really only good for certain things. But what we haven't figured out yet is what it's actually going to be able to do. And that's going to blow everybody away over the next 5 years. And that's, you know, if you think about it, if we were having this conversation a year ago, ChatGPT didn't exist. Well, it existed behind closed doors. And companies have now, like Microsoft has completely pivoted around the role of artificial intelligence. The investments that have been made, the number of companies who have had to change everything that they do to accommodate, and that's in the space of 12 months. Imagine what the next 3, 4, 5 years are going to do.
To this point, David, what are some of the most promising seeds or, you know, starting ideas that you've seen in generative AI in supply chain? Because I'm sure you've seen quite a few, and I'm sure overall does quite a few. I'm just wondering, maybe we can give some examples for the audience.
I mean, Overhaul was, you know, obviously because, you know, because I get excited about this and because we partner with Microsoft, you know, they're very good about sharing updates and technologies with us. And so we actually created our own product called RiskGPT, which we brought to market maybe 5 or 6 months ago now. And rather than just another fancy chatbot, it was actually more focused internally. It was looking at our procedures and then automating those procedures based on the fact that even a human still requires some time to ingest data. So if you're watching a truck deviate from a route and a light signal and a ping going off, those are all processes that can be automated, but with ChatGPT pointed in a secure cloud at your data and your historical data, it can start to not only understand an actual event happening, it can start to predict what might happen next. And it can pull from all those random sources of information and say, based on where this truck is, based on what's happening, this is the set of procedures that now need to happen. And it gives a guided response to, you know, what we call a watch officer, somebody who's monitoring truckloads and vessels around the world. So we actually looked at it and said, there's a big automation opportunity. However, what's going to be really smart is pulling the intelligence from everything that we've ever done to create that predictive engine. So imagine being able to look at a particular load, ingest all of the relevant data and say, you were going to truck this through Arizona, but that might not be such a good idea based on all of these different warning signals and based on the history of anything on that route. It may be better to actually go north and go this route and have a less chance of potential theft. That's the kind of really interesting things that I'm starting to not only develop ourselves, but I'm starting to see out there. The supply chain has been designed to sense and respond, but that's no longer good enough. It now needs to be able to anticipate and to act. And so this, you know, I always talk about supply chain as it should be cognitive. It should be a thinking, breathing, living entity because it never stops. It's always on. Supply chain doesn't close down at 5 o'clock. Supply chain goes 24/7. And so building these cognitive engines, which are able to understand what's happening now, the history of everything that has happened, and start to be able to build those predictive capabilities is going to be fascinating, right? I mean, I see this already on some of the weather. You know, Interos, one of the companies I work with, has built this incredible engine around catastrophic event management. And, you know, for the hurricanes coming in through hurricane season, we're able to not only layer in the path of the hurricane, but then send, you know, advanced warnings to say, look, we're pretty sure that these roads are going to be closed. This area is going to be impacted heavily by, be it by flood water or anything else. It's giving companies the chance to prepare. If you're sourcing components from this particular region and there's an upcoming typhoon, you think that people draw the dots and you think that people go, well, there's a typhoon, so that's obviously going to cause a disruption, but you'd be surprised that they actually don't. And so having that intelligence to say, not that there's a typhoon coming, but saying this typhoon, based on historical trends, is going to have this level of impact. Is your supply chain understanding that potential impact and then planning in advance? And so having that insight is just incredible. And now supply chain has to create, not only take that information, but actually generate those actionable insights. And then the third part is, you know, I think about it in three layers, Andre, because my brain is simple like that. And the first bit is really digitize the action. The second layer is digitize the process. And the third layer is digitize the decision. And I think that we're now starting to get a lot of traction around digitizing even to the process level. But ultimately, it has to get to that. Okay, we're not going to give complete control, but there's so much in supply chain is just, you know, XYZ. That's why it's called supply chain. The ability to automate those decisions, even when something moves, is not that far away. And that's what's going to really, I think, drive that next wave of technology.
That's fascinating. And I have to agree with you, David. It's the anticipation part and give a list of action that makes most sense. That's definitely a focal point now. And connected to anticipation, I wanted to ask you, because from the corporate perspective and the client's perspective, you also have a lot of data points. And we also hear a lot of different people having more optimism or pessimism regarding the next 18 months. But I wanted to ask you, what do you think will happen in the global economy? Maybe we talk about the US, Europe, Asia, but what do you think will happen in the next 18 months? What are the global trends, economically speaking, and how should the companies raise themselves, or what should they expect and do?
It feels like it feels very much like a moving target. It feels very much like every time that you think that you can trace a pattern, then it jumps erratically, you know, a little bit like the stock market. It just 3 days a week, it doesn't actually make any sense. However, I think that I'm not going to say that the worst is over. I think that it's manageable, and any dip will be short-lived. Everything just seems to be moving at a faster pace. And I think that's okay. I think that, you know, venture capital, private equity have been a little bit sitting on the sidelines, but are starting to come back in. I think that we're starting to see, you know, the shoots of growth again. This holiday season will be kind of interesting in the US, because, you know, Amazon, like today, are actually, you know, having a Prime Day sale today, and all the early indicators are very positive. So I'm not sure that the economy is as bad as it is being portrayed in the press. Yes, okay, there's lots of different signals, but the world moves at a different pace than it did 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago. And so it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, are we going to have a soft landing? Are we going to have a harsh landing? Are we going to have a crash landing? Or are we just going to bounce a little bit and then glide on? And I can't predict, but it's, to me, it's interesting that we've even got this far into 2023 and the inevitable recession and crash hasn't happened yet. And, or maybe it happened in a very subdued manner and we're going to bounce along for a while, but so much can change very rapidly. As we see in daily news events, it's, you know, the world is an interesting place right now. From a supply chain perspective, what is kind of fascinating is, you know, there's a lot of discussion around, you know, are the days of big China manufacturing over? You know, are the big suppliers moving? I'm just not sure. I think that's a topic in its own right. But what I am seeing is a lot more clever thinking around the movement of inventory. The traditional hub and spoke model, build it, ship it, put it in a warehouse and then sell it. There's a lot more direct layers that are happening. You know, clothing companies like Shein, they're not warehousing product. They're shipping direct to the customer from Southeast Asia. Now, that would have been nearly unthinkable even 5 years ago, but would have been cost prohibitive. But now it's becoming more evident and it's very, very effective. The consumer is shifting a little bit again. You know, the instant gratification is moving to, is there a thought process around, hey, what damage am I doing to the environment? If I ship in a slower mode, will I be able to reduce carbon emissions? there's the fast boat network now coming out of southern China. So you can get, you know, even on the ocean, basically 2 weeks, you know, door to door from southern China. And that there's a service now, you know, into Rotterdam as well. So the world is shifting. The consumers are shifting a little bit. There is new and interesting ways of getting product, finishing, you know, more near shore than offshore. There's a supply chain is, as always, becoming more complex and more fun, but that's part of the excitement of it. And so as the economy, you know, ebbs and flows, the supply chain has to ebb and flow at the same time. And I love the creativity that sparks and generates in terms of a different way to think about an age-old problem. And that's going to be the interesting thing from a supply chain perspective for the next 18 months.
Thank you for sharing that, David. I think there's a need of a lot more optimism and seeing things from a broader perspective. And, you know, the doom and gloom it will always be there, hopefully not for long. But yeah, there's pockets and pockets, you know, from what you were mentioning with some companies doing great new models or some industry like EVs doing great because it's the new needed thing for climate change and so on. I wanted to shift a bit gears and maybe go for the more of a conclusion of our chat, but I haven't asked you about one thing, and I wanted to about talent, and maybe from both sides, because you're situated somewhere in the middle, both interacting with a lot of startups, also interacting with a lot of supply chain executives or up and coming executives, and you having such a successful career yourself. So I was wondering if you were to give a piece of advice both for startups that are trying to make it in supply chain and for supply chain professionals that are trying to be executives in successful companies. I know it's a loaded question, but what would you say to both type of groups?
I think for startups, there's a couple of things that I just continually see that I think are important. I think it's very important to understand your purpose. It's very important to understand why you exist and have confidence and commitment around that. It's very easy if you're a very small company and you get a big customer. The big customer is designed to continually add to your remit. That's not a good thing if you're a startup. You get distracted. And when you get distracted, you lose your focus and you lose the reason that you exist. So for early stage companies, my guidance to you know, these early stage founders and CEOs is be very clear and very crisp in terms of why you exist, and then stick to that. You will see a lot of shiny objects. Those shiny objects are not going to help you develop in the way that you think they are. So be very careful about that. The other thing that I always tell them is, I don't know why you're ever nervous about asking a question, because the worst thing that could happen is for somebody to say no, and you've got this far, I think you can cope with that. So when you are in front of a big company or when you are reaching out, it's okay. Have the conversation. Don't be afraid because you think you're not ready or you think you're not skilled or you think you're not there. Because the worst thing, the absolute worst thing that could happen is somebody would say no. And that's perfectly okay, because you have to understand that process. And it's better to be interested and curious than hope that somebody will just notice you. So you've got to get out there and you've got to put yourself out there. For up and coming supply chain executives, and you know, it's a really interesting question, because that's kind of why we put the academy together. It was to fill those gaps. And so, you know, the Visibility Council and CSCMP are really passionate about growing that next generation of leaders as well. And so that's why it was a natural fit. I think to be successful, you have to break things. You have to, if you just accept the way things have always been done, you're never going to be able to change them. You know, I used to tell people in Microsoft, I always picked up the nastiest problems. Whenever there was something that nobody else wanted to touch, that was the thing that I went and asked to own, because I looked at it and said, hey, it's completely broken. If I even make it 10% better, that's a win for the company. And that's the way that it should be. So I continually look for problems because I like solving problems. Up and coming, you know, supply chain executives, they've got to think differently. They've got to push the boundaries, and they've got to think, what can technology enable for me? Because it's going to happen anyway, and they need to be in front. It's okay to fail fast. Just don't get stuck in it. Whenever something doesn't work, you know, raise your hand, say, yeah, that wasn't really a good idea. Now can we go and try something else? Because we have to move at that speed, because the world's moving at that speed and our customers are moving at that speed. And it's just not good enough for us to stay static. It's that we can't stay static in an ever moving environment. And so for those up and coming leaders, it really is, this is our time. This is the time of the supply chain practitioner. This is the time whereby the things that I never dreamed would be happening and the spotlight that we have early in my career are now all there for the taking. So reach out and grab them. Don't miss this opportunity, and understand that we're not a cost center. We're fundamental to the absolute infrastructure of every single company on the planet. Think of the opportunity that we can do to change companies, to change profitability, to drive that excitement, and then look at a problem in a different way. That's kind of where I would, that's where I would go today, Andre.
You excited me and you motivated me. And I'm not a supply chain executive, but that went directly to my heart and brain in the same time, David. That's very refreshing. And thank you for sharing that. And I think on this note, we have to close it. And I thank you very much for all the wisdom that you shared today. Hopefully we'll do a few other activities together. But again, I appreciate the time and the energy, David.
No, I would love to, Andre. And thank you so much for taking the time. I really do appreciate it. And anything else I can do to help, please just reach out. Always available.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow elcatglobal.com/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or one of the podcast platforms. We are looking forward to your feedback.